And we welcome to the show right now our good friend, Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk and NBC. Mike, welcome back.
Vic, good to be with you, buddy. How are you?
All right. I'm doing great, and we are certainly not lacking for off-season headlines, as you well know. I've been pretty busy chasing a lot of different stories. I think the one that jumps out at me right away is Randy Moss's comeback hopes. Is that the way? I want to call it an effort, but I'm not sure if that's the right way to put it, and how he may be jeopardizing that with something called Moss TV.
Well, effort is always a dangerous word to use with Randy Moss because you never know when you're going to get effort and when you're not going to get effort. But as of right now, he seems to be motivated and driven and focused and ready to play. He's found Ustream, which allows him to go on the Internet and talk to his fans whenever he wants to. And he's like a kid with a new toy. I think he's going to get bored with it as quickly as a kid with a new toy does as well. Yeah. But you know, look, the guy, if he can still run, and that's a big if, and he's going to have to prove it to somebody, just like he proved it to Patriots coach Bill Belichick 5 years ago when the Patriots traded for Randy Moss. If he can still run, someone's going to want him. And there are going to be people who shy away from him, but they were going to shy away from him anyway. This Moss TV thing is just the latest manifestation of what has made him a unique character. But he's also, if he can still run, a unique talent, and there's somebody out there that I think is going to find a way to use him, again, if he can still bring it.
And that's a big if when you're, what, 35 years old. And it would, I'm going to presume it's going to be a team that maybe he has some history with. You wouldn't think a newcomer or a team that's not had any Moss history necessarily wants to jump into this fray, do you?
Well, you know, I don't know. I had thought that the Patriots would be at the front of the line, but it seems like they're not going to be interested, even though he didn't burn bridges when he left. I'm not sure that Tom Brady's going to want him back around. They could desperately use a deep threat, though. But you may need somebody that hasn't been fully exposed to Randy Moss to be willing to give him another chance, because I think anybody that's had him on their team has seen the good and the bad. And if you can just get the good out of him for a year, and if it can help you win a Super Bowl, then so be it. But I think with Randy Moss, you need to be ready to move on from him before he's ready to move on from you. And I think that's what the Patriots did when they traded him during the 2010 season.
Great point. There are a couple of teams, there'll be more than a couple, but a couple of prominent teams dealing with some salary cap room issues going forward. One being the Houston Texans, the other, of course, being the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC North. I want to start with the Texans just because the future of Mario Williams comes under question here as an upcoming unrestricted free agent, or at least scheduled to be, and the ability of that team to find room for him when they have a restricted free agent in Arian Foster, when they have a couple of other guys, Pro Bowlers, Chris Myers at center as a free agent, and is it Mike Brazil, at guard. Those two guys, one of them could maybe get a franchise tag. I would think that it's going to make it tough to find room to do something with Williams when you've got those issues. And then in the future, Dwayne Brown and Connor Barwin next year becoming free agents.
Yeah, this is an issue that bad teams rarely have to deal with, and it's the price of success. The players that helped you become successful become more attractive. They hit the market. And one of the biggest problems with Mario Williams is the fact that if you try to use the franchise tag on Mario Williams, it's going to be a huge, huge number because he's coming off of the last year of his rookie contract, which had a huge cap number. You take that because people think, oh, well, for an outside linebacker defensive end, the franchise tag is around $10 million. But the franchise tender is the greater of the average of the five highest paid players or 120% of what that player made the prior year. So if you've got a guy with a $20 million cap number from last year, his franchise tender is going to be $24 million. It takes up a ton of cap space, and if you can't work out a long-term deal with a lower cap number, you can't do any business. So I think that's the challenge the Texans are facing. And they may let Mario Williams go because, look, they were highly successful without him last year. He may just be a guy they can no longer afford to keep around.
So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out and how a player, a defensive end who clearly seems more comfortable in a 4-3 as an end than he might have been as a linebacker in Wade Phillips' 3-4. I wonder if that will come under consideration as well.
Well, but you know what, Vic? He did show that he could make that transition, and I know people close to Williams were very pleased with how he played early in the year before he suffered that season-ending injury, that he showed he can play in a 3-4 or 4-3, because that's a problem. If you're a defensive end in a 4-3 and you hit free agency, you've got however many teams are using a 4-3 are going to be your suitors. But now the 3-4 teams may be interested in Mario Williams, which would expand his options and maybe drive up the price tag.
Meanwhile, the Steelers, Mike, Ben Roethlisberger, James Harrison report in the Pittsburgh Tribune Review that each of those guys might be willing or in line or however, I don't know about the willingness part certainly, but certainly in line to have contracts restructured to help a team that needs all the help it can get to keep under the salary cap.
Well, and Vic, the basic restructuring is something that no player should ever refuse to do, because what you take is whatever money they're supposed to make this year, and you give them all except the minimum base salary based on that player's experience in the form of a signing bonus. So you drop the base salary down to around $700,000 or $800,000. You give the guy, in Roethlisberger's case, you give him $10 million in a guaranteed payment, and then that reduces the cap number. But the problem is you rob Peter to pay Paul. You're pushing cap dollars into future years, so you're going to continue to have these issues, these cap problems chasing you. And at some point, the Steelers have to ditch the restructuring, and they got to go to guys like Hines Ward, Chris Kimoiatu, Aaron Smith, and either cut them or drop their salaries down and actually save cap dollars, not push cap dollars into future years. Or otherwise, we're going to see this as a perpetual problem for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mike Florio, our guest here from Pro Football Talk from NBC, joining us on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Mike, Peyton Manning, that story is going to just continue to be, we know, a constant topic in this offseason, and especially when people like Bill Polian, the former president of the Colts, general manager, gets on a public forum, as he is right now, a regular on SiriusXM NFL radio, and discusses Manning. And most recently, he talked about his arm actually being strong enough or looking fine or having no problem, and others I know out there are would maybe be willing to debate that.
Yeah, and there really is going to continue to be an issue about Manning's arm strength. And his brother Eli was on David Letterman's show last week after the Super Bowl, and Eli said that Peyton is still suffering from issues with getting his arm strength back. And the one thing about Eli, there are a lot of good things about Eli, but one thing, I just don't think he'd ever tell anything other than the complete truth. So we still are waiting for Peyton Manning to get his full arm strength back. And meanwhile, you've got this chess match playing out between Manning and Jim Irsay, the owner of the team, over, and look, I think it was a brilliant move by Jim Irsay to basically say, we want to keep you. Let's come up with a contract that works. Because, you know, Vic, if the Colts don't pay Peyton Manning $28 million on March 8th, it's not like there's another team out there that will. His market is going to be influenced by what he can do. So if he's willing to, and necessarily will have to take less than $28 million from some other team, why wouldn't he be willing to take that from the Colts? Well, the answer is he wants to leave the Colts, but he doesn't want to be the bad guy.
Right, right. And there seems to be as much of a PR debate over the, or, you know, an issue of public relations as there is a football/medical issue here.
Well, that's right, because we all saw what Brett Favre experienced or engineered 4 years ago when he left the Packers, and I think Peyton Manning doesn't want to be blamed for the divorce, even though it looks like he wants to leave the Colts, especially if they're going to draft Andrew Luck. Now, if they would come to him and say, you know what, we're going to keep you, Peyton, and we're going to trade that number one overall pick for any and all picks and players we can get. We're going to try to get a Herschel Walker package, and we're committed to winning as many Super Bowls as we can, then maybe that would change his mind. But he sees the handwriting on the wall. He's lamented publicly about the changes that are going on in the organization. Everything is pointing toward the Colts taking Andrew Luck, and they can say they want to keep Peyton Manning, but I think the reality is he wants out, and all he's got to do is nothing, and he's going to get out. He doesn't, you know, if he just says, hey, my contract is my contract, March 8th is going to come, and he's not going to be on that team anymore.
The makeup of the NFL's competition committee, with Jeff Fisher back now coaching the Rams, and he'd been on there, he'd been a co-chair of it before, and then you have Ken Wisenhunt, of course, is being added now to the competition committee, along with Mark Murphy, Wisenhunt, coach of the Cardinals, Murphy, the president, CEO of the Packers. How do you see that sort of that mixture with Stephen Jones from the Cowboys already on there, Marvin Lewis from the Bengals, John Mara Giants, Ozzie Newsome from the Ravens, the Browns Hall of Famer, and then Rick Smith from the Houston Texans. Anything about that makeup tell you anything with regard to how the decisions of this group would be made going forward?
No, I don't think so, Vic. It's always been a mixture of GMs and coaches and ownership-level people. And, you know, we always hear, when we hear competition committee, there'll be an adjective like the highly influential, whatever the case may be. Look, every year there's some recommendation the competition committee makes to the full ownership at the March meetings, and the full ownership fails to adopt it. I mean, the owners ultimately are going to make their own decisions regardless of what the competition committee does or doesn't do. And yes, there is influence in being on there because you set the agenda and you set the table for the owners to consider specific issues and rule changes, et cetera. But there isn't nearly as much deference to the competition committee as people would think. The owners at the end of the day are going to do what they want to do.
Another committee or a group that makes some very important decisions, that being the Hall of Fame Selection Committee, the 44 media types who gather each year, the day before the Super Bowl, to make that decision. You've had issue with how this is put together, and I know you've written about it and talked about it quite a bit, but most recently the idea that you're in favor of expanding, not necessarily cutting off or having term limits for those who are there, but expanding the group to include former players, former coaches from the Hall of Fame ranks.
Yeah, I think currently, Vic, with only 44 people involved in this process, it's too much power, and also apparently it's too much pressure. You've got Peter King and some others who are now thinking about giving it up because of the criticism and the scrutiny that's been going on in recent years. They don't get celebrated for the guys who get in. They get scrutinized for the guys who don't get in. And I think the more people who are voting, then that reduces the pressure, it reduces the power and the influence, and it also gives you a broader mixture of backgrounds. If you get people who aren't in the media, former players, former coaches, maybe some Hall of Famers, I know if I had a bust in there, I'd want to have a say in who gets into that room right next to me. There's got to be a better way to do this. I've got a lot of opinions on it. I think the Senior Selection Committee has served its purpose and should be retired. I think that somehow the players should be categorized so it's easier to compare apples to apples and you're not comparing apples to all sorts of different other types of fruits. But, you know, here's the fundamental problem. The Hall of Fame's Board of Trustees doesn't seem to be willing to do anything to change. It's a group that consists in equal parts of influential NFL names who I don't know really do anything, and then canary businessmen who may be more focused on the one-week party that precedes the induction than they are on the gatekeeping function that needs to happen. I just don't get a sense that there's a willingness to even consider whether changes need to be made. And I think if there's a walkout by several voters because the pressure is too great, then that may get the changes on the docket. Because it's just, and I've had people in the league, you know, kind of privately tell me, look, you know, the Board of Trustees really need to be more involved in this. They're the ones who are leaving the voters out to dry, and the voters are the ones who are the pincushions for the criticism.
Interesting perspective on that. The Combine coming up next week, Mike, obviously always a huge day on the NFL, huge week on the NFL calendar. Just your thoughts about where the focus will be, and in particular, Browns fans constantly interested in, you know, what they see, the greater fascination with the 4th and 22nd overall picks of this draft belonging to the Browns, and the idea that maybe one of those picks could be used on a quarterback, and specifically the name of Robert Griffin, the third constantly gets thrown around, the Baylor standout, and the idea that is 4 high enough for him to fall to them, or a deal needs to be made to move up to him. How are you reading just that whole quarterback tea leaf thing, and the whole idea that the Browns with those 2 first round picks are going to be, I think, major factors in maybe determining how this first round unfolds?
You know, back in 1998, when the Colts were legitimately torn between Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf, the Chargers actually traded up from 3 to 2 with the Cardinals to get Ryan Leaf. And I think that the Browns are in the best position to jump up 2 spots, and I think you have to go to number 2, because if it's not the Browns, someone else will climb up to number 2 in a trade with the Rams to get Robert Griffin III. And so a guy who probably won't be at the Combine, at least working out, he may be there for interviews and whatnot, he probably will be, but he won't. I'd be shocked if he's working out. Robert Griffin III is the guy that I think the Browns need to look at and say, hey, you know, we did a pretty good deal last year with the Falcons for the Julio Jones pick. Let's take what we got. Let's package it together. Let's get a guy who's going to give us the franchise quarterback that we've been desperately trying to find ever since the team returned in 1999. And, you know, even before that, before the team moved, there was still, other than Bernie Kosar, who's been a great quarterback for the Browns in the last 30 years.
Right. It's going to be a lot of fascination, as you say, over that player and of the quarterbacks in general, I guess, once we get to Indianapolis. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, and, you know, it's so funny because every year these same issues come up. How fast a guy runs in a T-shirt and shorts, and how it's all disconnected to actually what you do on a football field, but everybody's obsessed with it. It's a little four-day Olympics for NFL fans, and, you know, even though I complain about it, I'll have the TV on NFL Network for four straight days if I'm not there.
It'll be, right, riveting attention getter. All right, great stuff. Michael, thank you so much, and we will talk soon.
Okay, see you, Vic.
He is Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk and NBC joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford, brought to you by Madden NFL 12 in stores now. EA Sports, it's in the game.